radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hi, this is Ed Ballum from Firehouse Magazine and Firehouse.com. Today we're talking with Bill Foster, Vice President of Spartan Motors. And Spartan Motors is one of the world's largest makers of custom cabs and chassis for fire apparatus. Today we're going to be talking about apparatus maintenance and preventative maintenance for fire trucks and emergency vehicles. And Bill's a longtime firefighter and has been in the trucking business for years. And with that, Bill, could you please introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us a little bit about your background and your firefighting experience and your trucking experience, and let people know who you are.
Well, I spent 27 years in the fire service, Ed, and enjoyed every minute of it. And at Delta Township on the west side of Lansing, Michigan. And at the same time, I worked for 10 years for Diamond Rio Truck. And when Diamond Rio Truck went out of business, why, we started up Spartan Motors in the Charlotte, which is a southwestern suburb of Lansing. We lie right between Lansing and Battle Creek, and we've been building specialty chassis for 35 years. And after we had been in the chassis business for a while, we realized that no matter how well you build a chassis, when you put it out on the street, things fail. Relays fail. Light bulbs break. We all know that, and they got to be maintained. And all the supportive components, they have a life cycle that need to be properly maintained to make the trucks safe. And it goes much deeper. And so we started doing a lot of fire truck training because of the fact we felt the need for the mechanics to have a vocational opportunity to learn. And I think one of the biggest things that we've had out there to support was the EVT Commission, which basically says we're going to test and make sure that you know it. And that certification, I think, is a very coveted thing to hang on your wall, which says you know what an emergency vehicle is. You're just not ASC certified.
That's right. Emergency vehicles are different. They have unique systems. They have unique needs. And certainly learning right from the factory, as you folks have provided training for, is very important. Spartan Motors has seminars that they hold throughout the year, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit some of the topic areas you cover for that.
I think the big thing that everybody is concerned about is the safety items: braking, steering, handling, tires, wheel bearings, nuts, wheel torquing, all those kind of things are commonplace. And even though somebody says, I've been doing it for years, we know what we're doing, I see such things that came out. I don't see a date on it, but I just received it and I hadn't seen it prior. It's a safety bulletin for automatic slack adjusters. Mm-hmm. It's labeled 2009 Safety Advisory Firefighter Fatality Investigation and Prevention Program. It came out of NIOSH, and the subject says, manual adjustment of auto slack adjusters may contribute to unexpected brake failure on automotive fire apparatus. And goes on to discuss some of the shortcomings of what people basically do that they shouldn't be doing with auto slacks. And when we teach that particular item, we're quite meticulous about the fact that you don't adjust an auto slack.
That's right.
You don't adjust it. You back it off, and you pump the brakes with the engine running so that you support the air system several times, and then make sure that you measure it, that it adjusted the brake back up. And if it don't, there's about 17 points we like to cover in the class, all the way from frozen pins in the crevice to the proper slack that might have got changed out to an improper slack, or malfunctions that might occur in the setup, to make sure that the slack automatically adjusts it properly and basically is at 90 degrees to the push rod when it's got the brake applied so that it's at its correct force.
Yes. But these things sound like the trained personnel should be doing this. I think I'd be wary about a firefighter with a wrench in his hand and the creeper crawling underneath there and messing with the slack adjusters. What would you think about that?
That would be a no-no because of the fact that if he is not properly trained, he can be doing more damage than good because he can be masking a problem that's inevitably going to be a situation that when they need the brakes, they're going to fade out and he's going to float into an intersection, and that's not good.
No.
It needs to have proper support and coverage to make sure that they understand how it's supposed to function properly.
That's right. There are some things I'm certain that firefighters can do in the station, checking fluid levels, things like that. Perhaps you could talk to a little bit about that issue, things that firefighters can do and should do on a regular basis.
Well, firefighters definitely should observe things around their truck. Should look at both sides of the tires and make sure that there are no cracking, checks, cuts in the tires. That's a big factor that can prevent tire failure. And make sure those tires are in good shape. There's date codes on the tires that are printed onto the or embossed into the sidewall of the tire. And I personally don't recommend running a tire past 6-7 years. That is something that needs to be in the budget to replace on a 6-7 year basis so that tires that become weathered and like that are changed out. Air pressure is real important. Monitoring the air pressure. NFPA now says that you need to have a tire pressure monitoring system. And they got some people call them turkey basters. They're a little pop-up.
Yes.
That you can screw on. And if the tire pressure goes low, and by the way, they have to be matched to the pressure that is the recommended for that tire, and that's based on load,
mm-hmm.
So that they get the right one on there, it'll turn red. There are some that are more sophisticated that they actually send a radio frequency to the monitor in the dash and can alarm whenever there's a descending pressure in a tire and tell you that you have got a slow leak, that the tire is going down, and give you plenty of warning to find out what the problem is and get the tire taken care of, because as we know, a lot of the rollover accidents that have occurred with fire trucks have been due to tires blowing out.
That's
So inspection of the tires is a big, big factor.
That's right. Tires need to be inflated properly, and all the no cuts, no breaks, no injury to the tire at all, and all 4 points of the vehicle. So
the next thing that's, I think, quite important is that the wheel nuts are properly torqued, close to 500 pounds. It may vary a little bit with different types, but that wheel torque is important. And you can inspect that, any rust or anything running from around the nut down on the rim will indicate that there is an issue there. There are indicators available that can be put onto the nuts, and if the nut has any tendency to back off, it'll so indicate on the nut, lug nut indicator. And you see a lot of them in Canada, but you don't see a lot of them in the United States. It's a good safety precaution to make sure that those lug nuts are tight, and the wheels are inspected on a regular basis to make sure that there's no cracks,
right,
or deformation in the rims, bent rims, or anything like that.
And they all affect handling and steering of the vehicle, which probably leads necessarily into steering components and suspension. Are there things that people should keep an eye on that are visuals that can cue into potential problems down the road? For, you know, a steering wheel that vibrates too much, or sagging springs and things like that. Perhaps you can talk about maybe some of those things that people should keep an eye on.
That is something that you will also look at when you're under the truck. As you're rolling around and draining the air tanks to make sure there's no water in them, inspect all the cable ties that are up around the frame, the drop hoses, to make sure that they have no damage. And naturally, it never hurts to have somebody put their foot on the brake pedal and listen for those leaks that you might hear underneath the truck that you might not hear from the driver's seat that are minor, because you want to catch them when they're first starting to fail before it becomes catastrophic. And when you're looking around those wheel ends, make sure you inspect the springs. Look at each leaf carefully to make sure there are no cracks in the leaves, because a crack in the leaf can allow the leaf to turn and cut the tire and have a catastrophic blowout. So
that's right.
Those are important things to look at.
Yes, exactly. Now, how about, obviously, you've got to have these vehicles start up immediately and on demand, so you don't want a no-start situation in any event. So I'm sure that batteries and battery cables need to be maintained and properly cared for. So are there some tips you can offer for battery and electrical maintenance?
Oh, most definitely. I think that when we go over the DOT requirements, one of the first things that we look at when we get to the batteries is the condition of the cables. Any kind of bloom around the cable or any discoloration can indicate that there is issues going on in that connection. They need to be taken off and properly cleaned and reattached. And there are battery terminal sprays that you can put on to prevent corrosive action. And those are quite important. But the key thing, while you got those cables off, mm-hmm, take a carbon pile and put on the battery And the battery needs to have a full charge. The surface charge taken off from it, which you can just run some lighting when you're doing the lighting inspection and take that surface charge off. And then with the carbon pile, adjust it to the battery type and the CCA ratings and reserve capacity ratings that you'll have with each battery. And do the carbon pile test to make sure that the battery is able to support its ratings. If it descends too fast, that means you've got cell failure inside the battery. And if you properly look after the batteries, they're properly maintained and charged. I know some people that are running batteries for up to 7 years. I know years ago, the battery technology was not what it is today. Mm-hmm. And I used to change my batteries in every one of my fire trucks every 2 years. So yep. That meant that 50% of them would get it 1 year, and the other 50% got them the next year, so I didn't have that big pill to swallow in 1 year. But
right.
constantly replacing them. Battery conditioners and like that to keep the battery up is quite important. But one of the things that I think, even if the people that are looking after their batteries and taking care of them need to do, is they need to go make sure that all the cables are attached properly to the starter.
Yes.
And torque properly. Because that diesel engine vibrates and those cables are constantly being shook to the point that you start getting loose connections, and that contributes quickly to a failure.
Exactly. That terminal is loosened up and suddenly there's no contact with no juice getting to the starter, and you've got a no-start situation. And it may be not that easy to detect because your headlights look pretty bright and they look like everything is fine, but if you don't have the juice to the starter, you're not going anywhere.
When it comes to flowing the high amperage that starter needs to turn over that big engine, that's where the rubber meets the road.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the engine, are there maintenance items that people should keep an eye on for fluid levels, oils, and making sure filters are all okay and up to snuff and proper? Can you speak to that, those engine maintenance issues?
Oh, yes. That's a real important issue. The oils need to be changed a couple of times a year or so, that because we're running into the warm and the cold and the warm and the cold. And we do a lot of short cycle runs, and you get a lot of moisture buildup. And so we need to make sure that we get that oil drained out of there, and make sure that we don't have a high level of moisture content. The engines do need to get up to temperature so that the breather can expire that moisture vapor out of the engine through the desiccant in the breather and drain it off. That's quite important. I know some people that have said, well, I know that 5,000 miles is a good number for to change oil, because my brother-in-law told me that. But he says it'll be a couple more years before I need to change it.
That's right.
Wow, you're headed for trouble.
Right.
It isn't about the mileage. It's about the condition of the oil with the short runs and contamination.
That's right. And we all know that fire trucks do an awful lot of idling or pumping at fire scenes and accident scenes, so the hours may be different too as well. Those engines are still turning and still using up the oil and still polluting it, so you're right.
But when it comes to moisture, again, remember they that we've got the sulfur content down to 15 parts per million in the fuel. So we have ultra low sulfur fuel today in the new engines. Now, when they took the sulfur out of it, you're more subject to algae. And algae occurs basically from warm temperatures and moisture in the fuel system. And so the one thing that you gotta watch closely is that the fuel is turned over properly, that the fuel is properly filtered. And for example, Fleet Guard has their FS series. What that stands for is fuel separator. Mm-hmm. And you'll find a valve on the bottom of the filter. And if you take that valve and open it up and drain the bottom of the filter, you will pick up any water that has got into the fuel oil and is collected in that filter. So that's an important thing, because water don't go through injectors and will shut an engine down pretty quickly.
Yes, it will. Now, back up for a minute. You mentioned something about algae. Are we speaking about, like, the green stuff that we all know about, and is that in the fuel tank and in the fuel system? Or maybe you could, I don't think I've heard of that, so maybe you can tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean by algae?
Well, any time that you've got moisture and warm temperatures in the fuel oil, you can have the potential to start growing algae, and it always occurs from water and condensate in the tanks.
Okay.
If it's turned over, filtered out quite rapidly, fine. But if they don't pump the bottom of the tanks out and keep it clean, it'll soon migrate into your fire truck. And fire trucks in some departments sit around for long periods of time in warm, moist climates, and the algae loves to grow in that. The low sulfur fuels are more susceptible to algae.
Okay.
Now, you referred to it being green. The last one that I ran into where they were having problems and nobody could identify what was happening, I went out and actually pulled fuel sample out of the drain plug in the bottom of the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And got what looked like real fine gray black paper mache in the fuel.
Wow.
And in the beaker, it would settle down to the bottom if you would shake it up. And somebody kept saying, well, it shakes up and it floats down, it's contamination from something.
Right.
And it was
else inside the tank or something, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, they kept thinking it was from the tank and or the fuel lines.
Yep.
And there's only one way to properly do that, and that's to send it to the lab. There's a lab down in Detroit area. There's one in Dallas area. There's several of them around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can take that fuel and put it on the slide and incubate it and see what happens. And the algae grew off the scale very short period of time. It never got to the true length of incubation that they normally run fuel at to see what the contaminants are in it. And that proved that it was algae.
Wow. And what do you do about that? You just have to remove the fuel, clean it, and then refuel it and put new fuel in? Is that how you fix it?
Yes. It needs to be filtered out and put an algaecide in it.
Okay.
And there's several different manufacturers of algaecides out there that can be put into the fuel. A lot of your premium fuels will already have an algaecide in them. for summer use, and then they'll have a winter compound in them for the winter time to, so they don't gel as fast. So there's the fuels have got additives in them to help prevent that if you get good fuels.
Now, we were speaking about filtering things. Obviously, you have oil filters, fuel filters, air filters. Those are all things that need to be checked and changed and maintained regularly. Could you speak to us about those, the importance of those items for engine maintenance and apparatus maintenance?
Yes, I think air filters are probably the most important thing of all of them because of the fact that that's what the engine ingests.
Yes.
And if the system is not tight, in other words, when you're inspecting it, you run your hand around and inspect all the tubing, the rubber elbows, tighten all the clamps, make sure that there is no broken worm drive clamps on any of the connections, because if they are not tight, and there is a hole maybe worn into the elbow, mm-hmm. or there is a rub point on tubing, it'll wear through it and allow contamination of those particles to get in, and it will destroy the engine by, well, it first starts on the turbo,
right.
and will destroy the turbo and do catastrophic damage to the engine. So that portion of it needs to be inspected real good. And make sure there is no damage to the air cleaner. The air cleaners that we use today, they're all a manufactured sealed air cleaner. It's a welded sealed assembly, and you clamp it into the hangers. And when it comes time that the air restriction gauge indicates that you've got a restriction, or on a regular basis you change the filter, depending on how much you run that truck and your weather conditions. If you, for example, out west in the sandy areas where they get a lot of dust in the air and they have dust storms, quite frequent work on the filtration system must be done to ensure that cleaner is in good shape and it don't start to plug up. All of the units today, I think, have got a restriction indicator to indicate that what the restriction is on it and alarm the driver.
Yeah.
And I know that some of the things on inspection is important. If the restriction indicator can be just getting towards the point where it needs to be serviced, and all of a sudden you notice the sluggish engine, but the light didn't come on. The guy had told me that the truck didn't run good. It was very sluggish. So I went and looked at the truck, and of course in our truck behind the headlights is where we have the spark arrestor.
Okay.
And I don't know how it happened, but it happens. A sandwich bag, a pretty good sized one, floated up in there and was laying across probably 45-50% of the surface of the spark arrestor.
Wow.
That restricted it. So it'd be like holding one nostril closed and trying to run a race.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no airflow there at all. And we know that we need airflow for combustion, certainly. So, belts and hoses, things like that we need to visually inspect.
Definitely. With silicone hoses today, you don't see too many problems with hose catastrophic failures because they have a longer life than the older rubber hoses. but they do need to be inspected and make sure that there is no cracking or any chafing on them. Belts inspected to make sure that the wear is even on them, that they're not glazed, and that slippage has caused them to wear off and go too deep into the groove of the pulley. And pulleys need to be inspected lots of times. I've seen where they have changed belts and they say the belts still squeal. Well, they had worn the pulleys out to the point that the pulley wasn't properly supporting the sides of the rib on the belt, and it was allowing the belt to slip because it wasn't wedging into the groove of it far enough. It was too deep.
Right, and that that misalignment, if you will, is what's causing that squealing. So.
Yes, that'll cause premature wear on the belts very rapidly.
Yeah. Now, and last but not least, I know you're a big guy for fit and finish, and you like to keep your apparatus looking nice, and perhaps you can tell us what we should do about keeping them clean and nice looking, so the exterior.
Well, the basically washing with cold water is the prescription that I use on all of my trucks, and there's a lot of different types of Turkish towels and chamois and other things that people like. There's a lot of different products that really do a great job. Any soaps that you use a very mild soap just to cut the oils off on the surface. And I like to take and use a carnauba wax on my trucks to make sure that the surfaces have good protection. All of our finishes today, basically when you put the finish on, it's a two-stage finish. Mm-hmm. And you've got your color and your base. Right. And then you put a clear coat over the top of it, and so you that clear coat is what gives the ultraviolet protection for the base coat.
That's right.
And make sure that you keep that clean, and so that nothing is on there that is going to eat on it. Nothing at that road grinds and things become acidic and cause issues on the paint. Any time that you've got chips and things, clean them with solvent and paint them in so that they're sealed up, because of the fact that that's where most of your problems will start as far as corrosion from either rust or that white rust that you get with oxidation and aluminum. As long as you keep it sealed up, it's real important. So I think that around the station house, touching all that stuff up and making sure that the chips from putting things in and out of the compartments and hauling our SCBAs in and out of the cab, haven't left any bare spots, and keep them sealed up, because if you do that, the apparatus will look good, and then we have a lot of pride in our ride.
That's right, and that's what it's all about. Keep it safe and keep it looking good. I think those are two really good things to probably close on there. So, well, Bill, is there anything else we should speak about that's burning in your mind that we need to cover that we haven't?
I think that we hit 90% of it. I think the other 10% that is what I see missed most frequently are grounds. When we talk about battery systems, a lot of people look at the battery system and they look at the B+.
Yep.
And the B plus is important, but remember the B minus can't be damaged in any way because it is a dual path system.
Yes.
You won't have B plus if you don't have the B minus. You have to have that dual path, and it's very important that we look at all the grounds. I know that a lot of the multiplexing problems that people experience out there in the field, they blame it on the electronics, but it all has to do with the proper grounds and grounds going to the proper proper B-minus field. In other words, we have about three different types of grounds that we identify too in a truck: clean grounds and dirty grounds, and then a general ground. And clean grounds, we like to put all of our electronics on, and our dirty grounds, they'll have the motors and things that can emit some noise into the system. But we got to pay close attention to them so that we don't have catastrophic failure off from the ground side of it, because electronics love clean power.
That's right. Clean power is the key for keeping all of that stuff running, and the scene light blinking and the engines running and all that, all those electrical components.
Our 2009 fire truck training conference, I would say that 45% of my classes in there all had to do with different forms of electrical. And the 2010, which will launch in August, and we have a week conference at the Lansing Center, we'll be covering everything from brakes to fire pumps to vehicle inspections, wheel end maintenance, engines, apparatus electrical theory, basic electrical, which is important. We have to remember those basics so that we know what we're looking at when we pick up that meter. And transmissions, multiplexing, a big variety of things, all the way down to the valves and nozzles. It's all what makes us shine out there. And Ed, the one thing that we have to remember, we are providing an emergency service, and we're exposed to a lot of liability.
Indeed.
And how we reduce liability is having excellent, trained, meticulous technicians that love their work and make sure those machines are properly maintained so they perform well. And that will reduce a lot of our liability out there. They can write all the books they want to for safety and NFPA and everything else, but if we don't execute, we don't achieve the goals.
That's right. And maybe we can close out with a little bit more about your conference that you have. Can you tell us the dates and where people can get more information about the conference and where to sign up, and who's it open to?
Yeah, that'll be on the SpartanChassis.com website, and you can go into training and you can sign up for it in that section under training. And it'll start on Sunday, August the 8th, and end on August the 12th, 2010. There will be an EVT test period on Sunday morning from 8:30 to 12:30. And there will also be EVT testing on Thursday from 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And I really recommend that mechanics that are responsible for fire trucks and ambulances and like that do get your EVT certification and stay up to speed. If you say that you got all kinds of training through community colleges and like that, the community colleges are good for basic truck, but they don't get into the vocation of emergency equipment. And that's basically where we want to target, to make sure that everybody understands that vehicle, because that's all about how do we make it safer and run better with no failures.
Yes, that sounds good. So for people that want to go to this emergency vehicle training for Spartan, go see them at SpartanChassis.com and pick up some more information, and I'm sure Bill Foster would be more than happy to fix you up and make sure that you know where you're going to be, and or someone on his team will help you get signed up for that class. It sounds like a good one, Bill, and I'm very glad that you shared that information with us, too. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Bill, and I appreciate your thoughts about apparatus maintenance, and good luck with your class this fall. I hope you get lots of folks signing up for you.
Yes, and if you can't make that class, we will be training in May the 1st at Southwest EVT Conference in Fort Worth, and we'll also be training in up in Canada. There's two or three locations up there that we will be training, and so we also with OVET. That's always in September. The Ohio Emergency Vehicle Technicians have a beautiful location down at the Ohio Fire Academy in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. And we will be down there training with them. They will have a nice cross-section of instructors and probably some of the best. They do a fabulous job, and I love to see as many EVT technicians get out there that can and train. We see them even from overseas coming to the United States to get this type of training, and so there's a lot of different locations throughout the United States that they can get classes.
That's great. And once again, that's all at SpartanChassis.com, correct?
Yeah. We won't have theirs listed, but you can go into the OVET website.
Okay.
And you can get that, and you can go to the Texas-Oklahoma Association, the Southwest EVT group. And they have a website, and you can get their class times. Like I say, I know that'll be on May the 1st, because I was just working on that a couple days ago, and they've got a very, very nice location down there at Tarrant College. Beautiful classrooms, excellent learning experience for anybody that wants to go get some training.
Wonderful. So it sounds like training, know what you to do, know how to take care of your apparatus, and keep it safe, and as you said, have pride in your ride. Thank you so much, Bill, for your time today, and thank you for sharing your thoughts on apparatus maintenance.
You bet, and thanks again, Ed. And I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Bill.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.